Morning Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night here on a loaded Monday. 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. As always, if you want to get in, you can on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. We go up until 7 o'clock. Well, later tonight, 8:45, we'll have college basketball, Big 12 showdown between Texas and Kansas. So that comes up at 8:45. But a full show for us today, and it is a great one. First and foremost, trivia night is back this week, Wednesday, at the City Sports Grill out in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30. We have half-price burgers, as always, so looking forward to seeing all of you down at City Sports Grill. It is now 40 degrees, but earlier today, I think it got up to like 48, but it was 48. It was real sunny at one point. I was actually outside, and you could feel the rays on your back, and I'm like, this is starting to feel like spring, okay? I felt like I should be out playing catch today. I felt like I should have my own spring training for the Albany, New York Men's League that I continue to play in despite the three-hour commute on weekends. And it's frustrating for me because I'm so happy whenever baseball season comes around. I love pitchers and catchers reporting. I love all the cliche stuff, the smell of fresh-cut grass, the look of a pristine field, sunflower seeds, crack of the bat. Like, I love all that. I'm a total sap for baseball romanticism that comes with opening day and opening day getting close and pitchers and catchers reporting. But I also love when the seasons are the seasons. Like, I love it's February. To me, it should be 0 degrees and snowing out. Like, I don't want to throw away winter just to get to opening day. So it's always tough for me. I'm happy to see the weather look like baseball, but I don't want to see winter go. I don't want to see it be 50 in February. That's not fun to me. For me, December through February is for cold. It's for snow. And then March is where we start to kick it into high gear and get some warm weather. I guess if you were asking me honestly my opinions on the weather, I would say, look, I could do without spring. If you were going to tell me, I could do without spring. Like, I can snow a boatload in February, and then let's instantly get to, like, 65 and above. I don't need it to be 39 and then 42 and then 47 and then 53. We'll go from lots of snow right into the warm weather, 65, 70 and above. And then in the fall, I'm okay. Like, let's go right from 65, 60 to 20. That would be fine with me also. I don't need it to be 41 and rainy and then 39 and windy. And then I like the seasons being the seasons, but I prefer summer and winter than spring and fall. As for what's coming up on the show today, Kylie McDaniels of Fangraphs.com, which is basically the pro football focus of baseball. He'll join us in just a matter of moments. I'll tell you a story I loved hearing from J.D. Martinez today at his intro press conference. Josh McDaniels should be furious, and he should be furious at none other than Bill Belichick. And Eli Bryant and Zach Coleman, Plattsburgh Men's Hoops, will join us at 6:40. They are SUNYAC champions. They knocked out Oswego on Friday. They beat Oneonta on Saturday. They are going to the NCAA tournament. And what a story they are. 22-4, 19 consecutive wins. They're running teams out of the gym, and they are going to the NCAA tournament. And they will play Friday at home at Memorial Hall. They will take on Nicholls College out of Massachusetts. So excited to talk to those guys. But first, let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. We've got Kylie McDaniels of Fangraphs, a guy I'd spoken to a couple of years ago when talking about draft prospects. So, Fangraphs is, as I just said, like the pro football focus of baseball. It's one of my favorite sites. It's right up there on the home screen, right up there on my bookmarks. For a baseball nerd like me, it's pretty much heaven. So Kylie McDaniels is with us now. We'll talk about J.D. Martinez being formally introduced as well. We've got him on the line. Kylie McDaniels, Fangraphs. Thanks for being with us, Kylie. How are you?
Doing great. How about you?
Good. And Red Sox Nation good today because they get J.D. Martinez. So let's just kind of start right off the bat. How much better does he make that lineup and this team moving forward?
I think it's a big difference. I mean, I guess coming into the offseason, the suspicion is that the Red Sox would go after Hosmer or Martinez or possibly both. And I got the impression that the Red Sox fans were a little bummed that it was sort of taking so long, and then you get Mitch Moreland to play first base, and then Hosmer goes off the board. So it seemed like this became necessary relative to expectations. Then you also saw, you know, the Yankees added some pieces, especially, you know, right-handed power. So it then almost became like it was necessary to add Martinez to improve the team, but then also to fill the need and the expectation, and then also to keep up in the division. And it kind of did all those things. And then the fact that you have the, you know, multiple opt-outs here makes it an interesting contract. But it also isn't one of these, you know, 7-year, $150 million deals where it could, you know, hamstring the franchise if he ends up, you know, taking a turn south in a couple of years.
You know, our listeners know this. I love Pro Football Focus. I love your site because I love analytics, and I love examining the game from that way. And I went to Fangraphs today, and I looked at the projections that you guys have on your site, and you've got the Red Sox finishing below the Yankees, and Martinez having a, you know, a year where he hits sub 300. Now, they're not so much Fangraphs in particular projections, but there's a bunch of different sites out there that do them, that you put all the info up there. How do those projections get done?
So currently we have Steamer, which is up pretty much the whole offseason, and then also Zips, which is done by Dan Zimborski. And I think the general perception is that Steamer is a little more on the stripped down side, like sort of a baseline to start with some adjustments put in there, and then Zips is a little more advanced, and we'll give you a little better idea of what's going on. And Zips has Martinez hitting a little bit better, has him at 288 with 38 homers, which I feel like that would be a pretty decent season. And so I would probably lean a little bit that way in this case, because I think Steamer typically will take the age and have sometimes a little more of a generic aging curve. So Martinez being a power corner guy at 30, you'll get hit a little more, whereas Zips, you know, might make an adjustment more for how good Martinez is and him specifically. So yeah, there's a, you know, a million different ways to do these things. You can try to treat every player the same and give them sort of a generic aging curve or when age is the same, which is obviously not accurate, but on the whole, you'll get, you know, accurate results across all players, but then you'll have some big misses. And then other ones you try to account specifically and, you know, maybe try to guess if this player's going to get hurt or get a lot worse or get a lot better, and you're going to miss on a bunch of them individually, but then you might nail some players. So there's a bunch of different approaches, which is why we take a bunch of different projections, and then for our specific depth charts, we'll sort of average those projections together to kind of give you an idea of, you know, the middle of the road of all of these different approaches.
Now, you have a unique storyline. We actually spoke like 4 years ago when I was covering draft prospects at the high school ranks in Albany. You were at Fangraphs at that time, and then you went on and actually worked in a front office. You worked for the Atlanta Braves, and now you're back at Fangraphs. What was it like being a sabermetric guy working in the front office?
It was a weird experience in that most people that go into a front office often will be, you know, the guy that went to Harvard, the guy that played in the big leagues, you know, the guy whose, you know, dad runs the team. Like, there's like three or four like very common things that ends up being about 90% of a front office or a scouting staff. And I'm one of the rare guys that didn't do any of those.
Yeah.
So you kind of come in with, you know, sometimes I get painted as a scouting guy, sometimes I get painted as a sabermetric guy, depending on, you know, sort of what part of my work you sort of focus on more. And when I'm at Fangraphs, like, they have guys that can do sabermetric stuff better than me. So I tend to be more of the go to a game and, you know, write scouting reports and talk to scouts kind of stuff. But depending on the sort of setting within the Braves office, I would get painted as one or the other, depending on what sort of the rest of the room was. So it was a great experience for me to be able to work in a bunch of different departments in a bunch of different sort of capacities, and try to sort of be that middle of the road guy that can try to bring both sides together. Because, you know, a lot of times you'll have a guy that is completely on one side of the spectrum, analytics or scouting, or on the other side, and sometimes they can't hear each other. And so being in the middle, you can try to sort of parse what they're saying and try to figure out which one has a little more truth and try to, you know, help guide the group, even though I wasn't the guy making the decisions, but try to, you know, guide the group down the road to where, you know, there can be more harmony within the group. Not that, you know, we're turning over tables and throwing chairs at each other, but, you know, sometimes things can get heated when it's multi-million-dollar decisions. And so kind of being the, you know, the referee in the middle of it, and then also trying to find the correct answer, and then also on my own part, like, learning more things as you're around, like, sort of experts in various areas, you know, you can accomplish a lot of things. It's definitely not like the typical, you know, go work insurance or something kind of job.
Kylan McDaniel, Fangraphs.com with us here. Big day for the Red Sox. They signed J.D. Martinez officially after a week's worth of speculation on physicals, et cetera. It's here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. You know, you mentioned kind of the, you know, how the two sides can butt heads. And I think if I'm not mistaken, Dave Cameron, the guy who started Fangraphs, or at least was the face of Fangraphs forever, he just left to go work for the Padres. How difficult is it to be that guy and try to infiltrate the, quote, traditional baseball world?
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I think if you were to make a list of what people in the industry would perceive as the most traditional sort of scouting teams, the Braves and the Padres would be, I would say, in the top 10.
Mm.
And I don't think that's necessarily accurate, because I think a lot, you know, given the specific situation, I think both teams can be sort of, you know, 15th out of 30, like right in the middle of the road. But both of you know, sort of the decision makers for both teams have sort of traditional backgrounds. There's definitely, I'll say it this way. I wrote an article, I want to say about a month ago at Fangraphs, about sort of the current state of sort of stats versus scouts, which is kind of the phrase that was used back in Moneyball times that doesn't really apply anymore because everybody's using both. It's not one versus the other. But there's, like I said, a spectrum where things can go back and forth. And one of the things I pointed out is that I think fans will look at it and say, oh, the Dodgers have Andrew Friedman. He came from the Rays, so they're, like, very progressive. Or, you know, Dombrowski came from the Tigers. He runs the Red Sox. He trades prospects, so he's very traditional. And it's obviously not that simple. I mean, oftentimes that'll get you in the right kind of area. But a lot of times, like, one team's draft room will be very progressive because of one or two people's influence. And then the pro scouting department are making trades for minor leaguers or signing minor league free agents will be very scouting oriented because the guy that sort of runs that process is you know, a different way. And, you know, and then as you get to international, there's way less data and, you know, sort of analytical things to use. So you're going to get naturally more, traditional and scout based in that sort of area. And I think you know, I've worked for multiple different teams in the past, and certain times you would see one GM make a decision seemingly 100% on scouting basis or taking a gut feel from a scout about this guy's makeup or, you know, work ethic. And then in another very similar situation, go almost 100% toward the analytics. And I think that mirrors in a similar way how when, you know, I'll cover the draft and, you know, a fan of a team picking 20th, they pick a guy, I have him 30th on my board, and they're like, oh, why do we make such a bad pick? And I keep trying to point out that two teams could have the exact same information. One team has a guy ranked 10th on the board. The other one has him ranked 30th. And it's not clear that either one of them is wrong. Like, yeah, the amount of variation within different departments of the team and within different draft rooms of different teams, I think would surprise people. And that we, and a lot of times, try to get that industry consensus and kind of average it all together. In some cases, you know, myself and Eric Longenhagen, the other prospect writer at Fangraphs, will try to, you know, use industry consensus and then shade it toward whatever we think the right answer is. There's, like, a lot of different ways to present it, both as a team and as a writer, but I think there's more variation and sort of differences between individual scouts and people than the average fan would see from just reading the sort of consensus media reports.
I think the big story of this offseason, well, I know the big story of this offseason, has been the slow-moving free agent market and kind of teams taking back the power in these contracts. And I think I started to see the shift last year. Edwin Encarnacion, Mark Trumbo, they didn't get the big money deals that we thought. And I just kind of pointed to, well, teams are starting to value the entire player again rather than one specific skill set. You know, this guy only hits home runs but doesn't run or play defense. When you're in the front office, are you seeing, you know, did you see more of a shift to where, look, we're willing to give out the big money, but only if you can do it all and you've got youth on your side too?
Yeah, the offseason, it's one of those things that every time you talk to a scout or an agent, they always have a different idea of what's happening. And so I guess my part is to try to take my experience and, you know, what I know and put that together with what these guys are telling me. Because obviously I'm not, you know, negotiating contracts with players, so they know some things I don't know. I think it's been obvious, and I've mentioned this before in some stuff I've written at Fangraphs, that the sort of teams that are framed as, oh, these are the progressive teams, that when they're signing, you know, or trading or, you know, whatever, players for their big league roster, they are leaning toward the analytic side. And at, you know, one point, maybe 10 years ago, that was four or five teams. Maybe a couple years ago, it was 10, 12 teams, and now it seems like it's over 20 teams. And so one of the sort of tenets of that is, you know, more Ivy League, NBA sort of approach, where you're trying to minimize risk And you saw that in Cleveland for years and years. And now, you know, all the guys from Cleveland have been promoted and spread out to other teams. And, you know, other owners and GMs have seen that this is a way that you, you know, keep your job longer. You know, these guys want to keep their jobs. They're making seven figures. So they'd like to keep doing that. Yeah. And so when you start seeing that happen and that's slowly spreading to a point, and then I think we had a bit of a perfect storm this year where we have multiple big market teams who typically are sort of the trump card that come in, you know, off the top rope and sign this player for a big amount of money. Multiple ones are trying to get under the luxury tax. They've essentially given themselves a hard salary cap. And then you also you have a historic free agent class coming next year. So maybe the mid-market teams that are thinking of spending a lot of money to improve, they're like, well, there's a big-time player next year. We don't want to spend all our money now and then realize we could have afforded a better player next year. And so now the top of the market has kind of depressed where the big spending teams aren't doing it. The teams that might be able to dabble in there and get a player every couple of years, they're not doing it this year. You've got the teams getting more conservative in general. It seems like the owners who can be called directly by agents like Scott Boras to make a sort of a foolish deal, they're doing this less often, presumably because their GMs are telling them not to. And then you also have Scott Boras had an unusual amount of this year's class and seems to be playing overplayed his hand a little bit. So I think when you kind of put all of these factors together, it kind of gives you an idea of why it happened this year, but it was going to happen eventually, and it had been slowly moving this way for a while, as you were saying.
Kylan McDaniel, Fangraphs.com, one of my favorite sites, go-to site for baseball fans. We're less than 6 weeks away from opening day, and it can't get here any faster. Kylie, I appreciate the time, man. Best of luck. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yep, thanks. Good to be on.
Hey, good to have you on as well, Kylan McDaniel. So love talking to him. Love talking to the guys over at Fangraphs, the people over at Pro Football Focus. Those are just the sites for me. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. Again, going up until 7 o'clock here. Then we'll have college basketball on tonight. Again, if you want to get in, you can so do so on the Town Fair Tire text line. Pump for tonight after the show. Going to head over to RJ's Kitchen Sink Wings Taco Monday. So if any of you are over there, feel free to come over and say hi. Also, when we come back from one McDaniels to another, Josh McDaniels, Patriots offensive coordinator, should be real upset at Bill Belichick. This wasn't supposed to be part of the deal. That's next. Champlain Valley Game Night 101.3. Yes.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas. Only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night on a Monday right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Pumped about the news. Plattsburgh State not only in the NCAA tournament on the men's side, but hosting the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament Friday and Saturday over at Memorial Hall across the lake. And we're going to have a couple members of that Cardinals team with us here in about 20 minutes. Eli Bryant and Zach Coleman, two seniors, two captains, are going to be with us. We'll talk about the Cardinals headed back to the big dance, and they'll take on Nichols on Friday night at 7:30. So happy for them. And you know what? If you are in Plattsburgh, or if you're a Plattsburgh fan, or you're listening and you're a Plattsburgh alum, this is awesome. And D3 basketball never gets the respect that a D3 hockey gets. And the reason why is because, one, there is technically D2 hockey, but there's not really D2 hockey. There's not a lot of D2 hockey. So, and there's just less college teams around, right? 64 Division I teams, even less of that at the Division III ranks. So there's just less players playing. And so making a college team is more selective in hockey than it is in basketball. So people generally think, well, more competition for less spots. So if you make a team, you're proportionately better. Players from Division III do go to the NHL. It doesn't happen routinely, but it does happen. It happened with a guy I went to college at Oswego with. People from Norwich are playing in the NHL, or, you know, on the verge of getting to the NHL. So college hockey around here and nationally has always been regarded very high. Plattsburgh, Norwich, Middlebury, those programs, develop Olympians as well in some cases. So it's always gotten that respect. Basketball doesn't get that respect as much because there's 360 Division I teams, then how many more Division II, and then how many more Division III, and how many are in junior college. So there's just more players playing, so people assume, well, everybody gets to play college hoops if they want to. I remember what it was like when
Oswego got to the NCAA tournament. I mean, I was the broadcaster as a junior and a senior for back-to-back Laker teams that got to the NCAA tournament. And Oswego was a hockey school, still is a hockey school, will always be a hockey school. But the way that that campus embraced college basketball for those two seasons, and specifically for conference tournament runs and conference tournament championships, it was awesome. It was one of the best times of college that I had. As much as I enjoyed playing on the baseball team, one of the things that I loved most was being the broadcaster for the basketball team, because I was also the broadcaster as a freshman and they weren't as good. So I was all in and invested on this team from the start, and I remember how fun that was for campus, and it was like, yeah, this is what I've been telling you for the last 2 years. This team is fun, and this team is now good. So I'm rooting for the same thing for Plattsburgh. I know that Memorial Hall is going to be packed on Friday night for that game against Nicholls. If you're going, 802-655-6672, let us know that you're going. We'd love to hear the stories of how you are behind Cardinal Country. So Josh McDaniels should be furious at Bill Belichick. He should not be mad. He should be furious. Josh McDaniels and the Patriots offensive coaching staff are not going to travel to Indianapolis for the scouting combine. The combine kicks off on Wednesday, and McDaniels isn't going to be present. And I know people are saying, well, Brady, McDaniels can't go to Indy because he spurned him as their head coach. Maybe, but I don't care. McDaniels should be livid, and he should be livid at Robert Kraft, and he should be livid at Bill Belichick. Part of the reason, supposedly, that Josh McDaniels was going to stay in New England and not become head coach of the Indianapolis Colts was because Bill Belichick was going to open up his world to him. Bill Belichick was going to show him all the ins and outs of coaching, from salary cap handling to draft prep and everything that a coach has to deal with and be all-encompassing. He was going to share that with McDaniels. And my first thought was, why was Belichick not already doing that? But put that out to the side here for a second. If part of the reason McDaniels was going to stay was because Belichick was going to be an encyclopedia for him and let McDaniels be a sponge, wouldn't you think the scouting combine is an important thing for him to know? The scouting combine helps you with player evaluation, helps you with conversing with players and conversing with scouts and dealing with media obligations in a different way than you have before. It allows you to see the quarterbacks, and you're going to take a quarterback in this draft. At least we all think you're going to take a quarterback in this draft. Shouldn't the offensive coordinator, who's now going to supposedly get the keys to the kingdom of Belichick's mind, shouldn't he have every opportunity to evaluate all the quarterbacks in this draft that he might eventually be working with and developing for when Tom Brady leaves? Shouldn't McDaniels get that chance? And I know what you'll say. Brady, they got pro days. They got individual workouts and individual trainers. He can see them again. Maybe. Maybe. In fact, yes, he can see them again. But doesn't he deserve every single opportunity to see quarterbacks, to study quarterbacks, converse with quarterbacks, meet with quarterbacks that he is going to be working with this year and developing behind Tom Brady, and then eventually when Tom Brady leaves? And lastly, if Robert Kraft, we don't know this, but if Robert Kraft told Josh McDaniels, you are our head coach in waiting, or you're the guy at the top of the list when Bill Belichick leaves here, wouldn't you think that he'd like every opportunity to see the quarterbacks that he's going to want? To see the quarterbacks that he's going to be working with when Tom Brady leaves? This is wrong. Belichick and Kraft supposedly sweetened the pot for him to not take the Indianapolis Colts job. To not take the Indianapolis Colts job, they raised the stakes. And one of the things that they supposedly promised was that Belichick was going to open up his world to him and be more accessible and to teach McDaniels more. And the very first chance he has to do that, he's not letting him go. this isn't just McDaniels being scared of Indy and saying, no, I'm not going to go. This is the entire offensive staff not going. This is Belichick and Kraft saying that their time is better spent in the offices in Foxborough at One Patriot Place than it is going to the combine. For McDaniels, who supposedly wants to learn so that he can be a better head coach second time around than he was in Denver the first time around, he's getting hosed here. And I'd be real, real upset if I were him. And this is not me Patriot bashing, okay? I don't hate the Patriots. Like, I'm a Seahawk fan, yes, but I don't hate the Patriots. My girlfriend's a Patriot fan. I like to see her happy. Our listeners are Patriot fans. I like to see you happy. It's good for business if the Patriots are good because you're more interested in listening to our station. I'd like the Patriots to be good. So I'm not Patriot bashing. I did the same speech on Friday when, you know, much lower level, Blake Swihart of the Red Sox, who was being told his best chances to make the Red Sox this year at second base and in the outfield, they had him playing catcher. Don't tell me you're going to do something or tell me you'll put me in a position and then go and do the opposite at the first opportunity. Swihart's developing at second base, they put him at catcher. Why? McDaniels is supposedly going to get to learn everything in Belichick's head. First chance to be with him at the combine, sit next to him, talk about player evaluation, talk about how to handle the media, especially media fallout from that Colts debacle a month ago, and he doesn't get taken with him. I'd be fuming if I were Josh McDaniels. Fuming. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, 802-655-6672 is the number. We're 10 minutes away from Eli Bryant, Zach Coleman, Plattsburgh State men's basketball team. Let's get more J.D. Martinez sound in. I loved, as I said earlier in the show, I'm a sucker for romanticism in baseball. I'm also a sucker for just romantic stories in sports. The kid who comes from nowhere, the guy who's overcome injuries. J.D. Martinez is that guy released from the Houston Astros when the Astros were horrible. Released from Houston when they were nothing. Couldn't make that crop of Astros that eventually came up and won the World Series last year. He was in that group, and they cut him. Then he goes to Detroit, plucked off nowhere, and at 27, finds his talent. Like, I root for stories like that. I like hearing stories like that. And J.D. Martinez touched on it today in his first press conference with the Red Sox. He talked about the adjustments that he's made, the road that he's traveled.
4 years ago, 2013, I believe, going into 14, I kind of realized I had to make a change, and I really just kind of dedicated myself and really dove into the whole what makes other players good and kind of why can't I be that good type deal, and I kind of just started uncovering, you know, little pieces, and really kind of just the lights came on for me. I started noticing things that I never noticed before and started making adjustments, tweaks, and then one thing led to the next, and I kind of was onto something. I felt like I was onto something. I wrote it out, and here I am today.
I love stories like that. I love also the self-awareness. You've heard me talk about this before. Self-awareness is something that I really value because it's really, really difficult at times to look yourself in the mirror and say, here's what I've thought is working forever that really isn't. And he talked about making adjustments and being open to adjustments and learning new things. And the thing that I took away also from his press conference, something I did not know about Martinez, is his meticulous work ethic when it comes to his craft of hitting. And he talked about he's got a thick notebook full of notes that he takes, and he'll go watch video in between at-bats, and he'll go back in the cage and work on things. I love that. And in some ways, part of me thinks too much information is never good. Paralysis by analysis. I was the same way. Got in my own head. That's why I never reached the potential I had as a pitcher. Although I played in college, and I played 4 years, and I'm incredibly lucky to do that because not everybody gets to do that. And I finished with a better than 500 record in college. I was still was still above average, but I wouldn't say I was as good as I could have been. There's a reason why I pitch much better now in the men's league circuit than I did at the Division III college level. And there's a reason why I was a better coach than a player. I always thought I was a better coach than a player. That information that can bog you down as a player helps you as a coach in a lot of ways. And the pressure I put on myself was so immense. But I do love hearing about guys who have that work ethic and have that drive to get better and notice trends and to go pick up on things. And they embrace that information. Martinez was all about that. That was a story that I learned today. That was the story that I, that was one that I had not known about Martinez beforehand. The last thing that I took away that I loved about Martinez's press conference was he talked about players that he had played with and looked up to. And he talked about his relationship with Torrey Hunter when they were in Detroit. Torrey Hunter, the longtime outfielder, mainly with the Twins, but also with the Angels and the Tigers at the end. And he was a Gold Glove caliber and a real good guy. And Martinez talked about Hunter's influence on him.
When I went to Detroit, you know, I remember just being locker mates with Torrey Hunter. And, dude, I can't say enough great things about Torrey. You know, just the way he carried that clubhouse and the things, little tricks I've learned, you know, how these guys can change the mood in a clubhouse between him, between Miggy, you know, Victor, Ian. You know, I was very fortunate enough to play with those guys and, you know, learn a lot of tricks from them. But then going to Arizona and just kind of seeing how Goldie did what he did and how he really controlled that clubhouse, it was... You know, I was able to learn a lot, and I've been able to play, fortunately for me, I've been able to play with a lot of really good players and a lot of really good leaders.
You know, I love that story about Hunter, because we spend a lot of time talking about, is it the job of veterans to mentor younger players? And in a lot of cases, we think that it is, but it also is understandable when veterans don't want to embrace that. Do you want to replace the guy who's coming to take your job? Okay, I've always felt this way, that it's easier for the number one wide receiver to mentor the number two wide receiver. There's two of you that can be on the field at the same time. It's not Tom Brady's obligation to mentor Jimmy Garoppolo. We'd like him to be, but if he doesn't want to talk to the backup, don't you understand that? Torrey Hunter could have lost a ton of at-bats to J.D. Martinez. I know there's three outfielders and the DH, so it's, again, a little bit more of the wide receiver, defensive back, linebacker scenario than it is the quarterback one. But when we debate that it's not really the job of a veteran to help out the younger player, it's nice, though, to hear when the veteran player helps out the younger player. That's something that I value hearing. Those are stories that I value hearing. And I also, again, along with that self-awareness, like when guys who have made it big, who have struck it big, who've got that big contract, when they remember the people who helped get them there, and when it's not lost on them, the people that helped them become a pro. Trevor in St. Albans on the Town Fair Tire text line, he goes, would you say J.D. Martinez is similar to Jose Bautista in Toronto? I was told he made some simple mechanical changes that led to a totally different player. It's a pretty good parallel. I think Bautista hit his stride even later than Martinez did. I mean, Bautista is like 36 years old right now, 35, 36. So he didn't hit his stride until, you know, 30, 31. And he had been released, and he was playing third base for the Pirates, if I'm not mistaken, and really, really was struggling. So I think it's even more so pronounced in his case. And that's why Bautista now can't get signed. You don't think of him as being that old, but he's 36 years old. Because he didn't hit his stride again until 30, 31, 32. But it is a pretty good parallel by Trevor in St. Albans. You want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. All right, when we come back, they are SUNYAC champions, and they are NCAA tournament bound. Eli Bryant, Zach Coleman, Plattsburgh State men's hoop team. They'll talk with us now. They're 22-4, and they'll play Nichols on Friday night. I have a feeling they're going to be pretty pumped up to talk about it. Champlain Valley Game Night next, talking Plattsburgh Hoops, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Coming down to the wire on a Monday, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. It is Champlain Valley Game Night. Plattsburgh Hoops, 60 seconds from now, we get a text in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Ryan in Georgia says, Brady, what percentage do you think we'll see J.D. Martinez in the outfield, considering Boston has one of the best defensive outfields in baseball right now in Betts, Bradley, and Benintendi? If all three, if all four players are healthy all year, and that's a big if. I mean, Betts was down a little bit last year. Bradley's been down a little bit in the past. He was on the DL last year. Martinez has, you know, played a full season in, you know, in three of the last 4 years or whatever it is. So it's tough to say that they're all going to be healthy. But if they were all healthy, I think we see Martinez in the outfield less than 40 games, really. I would say the interleague games are he's going to be in most of those because you can't really afford to take his bat out of the lineup. So that's going to get him some games in the outfield where they're really kind of forced to put him in the outfield. Other than that, I would say you're looking at probably 15 to 20 games where he's in the outfield. And I think he thinks he's going to be in the outfield with a lot more regularity. Swihart, if he's on the team, he could play in the outfield. You also got Nunez who can be out there. Ruzny Castillo is playing well in AAA. Does he factor in? I think it's less than I think it's less than 40 games if everyone's healthy. But again, that is tough to speculate on because how often is everybody healthy? One team that is healthy and one team that's playing very, very well, NCAA tournament-bound Plattsburgh State men's hoop team, 22-4. They've won 19 straight games. They'll take on Nichols on Friday night at Memorial Hall, 7:30 across the lake. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line now. We've got a couple of guys from the team, Eli Bryant and Zach Coleman, both seniors, both captains. Guys, congratulations. Thanks for being with me. How are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's start with this. Eli, you score 16 points a game, second best on this team. Take me through the emotions of winning the SUNYAC championship on Saturday afternoon.
It was just a very exciting feeling. Like, we worked so hard for this. Winning 19 straight as well is just a dream come true.
You guys are 23-4, as you mentioned, 19 in a row. Zach, let's direct this one at you. This team was 9-9 last year in the SUNYAC. This year you go 17-1. I don't want to call it a turnaround because 9-9 isn't a bad record per se, but how did you get this good off a 9-9 record last year?
Well, you know, from last year, we knew our team had a lot of talent. Our guys are a very talented group of guys. This year, we just knew that we wanted to set goals, and, you know, after each goal was, you know, completed, we just set another one, and we just kept working hard. We trusted each other. Every guy on the team knew their roles, and we just played extremely well together, and our chemistry just went through the roof.
Zach, let's stay with you again on this one. You mentioned guys knowing their roles. You're a guy who's a captain. You are a starter, but, you know, you average 4 points a game. So how do you work to lead this team without the big statistical output?
Yeah, you know, I think my strengths are, you know, trying to keep the team composed on the court, you know, trying to run our stuff because we got guys on the team that can score upon, you know, when we need them to score. And I feel that my defensive capabilities are one of the, I guess, top, you know, skills on the team. And I feel like that, you know, with Eli and John and Eric Mack, you know, they're our primary scorers. And we just work our offense through them. And then if we just play some defense, we're going to be okay.
Eli, you guys are not new to the NCAA tournament. You guys were both on a team that lost in the NCAA tournament first round as sophomores. How does that experience prepare you for this one that's coming up this weekend?
We know what we have to do now. We have to play hard each game because if we lose, we're out. So coming into Friday, we're going to play our hardest and hopefully make it to Saturday.
Keep going on
from there.
What were the memories of that game? Do you guys lost, I want to say, 84-81 to Fitchburg State in a close game? What are your memories of that game?
I just remember them coming out hard, and we played a little flat. Even though we was in a close game, we didn't feel really comfortable. We wasn't playing our game, Plattsburgh basketball. So hopefully this coming Friday we play our hardest and just win.
We've got Eli Bryant and Zach Coleman of the Plattsburgh State men's basketball team. They just advanced to the NCAA tournament by winning the SUNYAC's automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. They're 23-4. They've won 19 in a row as well. Zach, I'll ask you the same question I just asked Eli. How did that experience 2 years ago, you know, how much more comfortable are you going to be this time around?
Well, you know, from playing all 4 years, I feel like experience comes into play. You know, going back to sophomore year, yeah, like Eli say, we came out a little flat. We didn't take our opponent seriously. And, you know, this year we're just rolling right now. We just got to keep that fire. We just got to play with heart and, you know, determination. And I feel that we're going to come into Friday's game, you know, ready to play, and then hopefully go into Saturday with the same mentality.
Now, Eli, as I said, you score 16 points a game. The guy who leads your team in scoring at about 23 is Jonathan Patron. I'm watching highlights the other day. This dude looks like a bowling ball coming down the lane. How tough is it to guard him in practice? How good is he?
He's very good. He's unstoppable, honestly. We double him in practice, and he still scores.
Zach, if you're the defensive stopper, you got any tricks on stopping him or no?
We can't give those away.
Hey guys, look, let me ask you this. You guys are both seniors, as we said. You're going to play in the NCAA tournament for the second time. Zach, I'll start with you. What are you going to miss most about Plattsburgh when you graduate?
I think it's just the team. I feel like this year particularly, we came together. I mean, we're like brothers on and off the court. You know, We're just really good friends, and you know, I'm just gonna miss, you know, practicing, playing games, and even just hanging out with the guys, you know, outside the gym. And I think that's one of the, you know, the main things I'm gonna miss about Plattsburgh basketball.
Eli, how about you? Is there a place in town, a food spot, something you're gonna miss, and be like, dang, I don't want to have to leave this?
Zook's restaurant. It's a deli spot. I go there every other day. They have the best subs. I'm going to miss that.
Hey, what about your guys' plans for after graduation? Again, both seniors. Zach, you got something lined up? Are you, you know, what's the plan here for when May comes? Because it comes up on you quick. Trust me, I know.
Yeah, I'm a nursing major, so, you know, study for the NCLEX, which is pretty much the boards to become a registered nurse. And hopefully, you know, I got an immersion 2 weeks in April at Westchester Medical Hospital back home, and hopefully, if I do a good enough job, they'll offer me a position and, you know, just go from there.
Eli, how about you?
I'm a business administration major, so hopefully something with that. And if not, I'm also trying to look to go play basketball next year somewhere, so hopefully it could take me somewhere.
Let me get you guys out of here on this. You guys are both from downstate. Eli, you're from Long Island. Zach, you're from just north of New York City. What brought you guys to Plattsburgh? Because, look, it's not all that close, but you guys have done a really good job at getting players from downstate.
Well, Coach Cam and Coach Kerr, they show real interest in me, so that's what really brought me here. And coming up here, all the team, they showed me love while I was on my visit, so that's one of the main reasons why I came.
How about you, Zach?
Like Eli said, you know, the coaching staff is unbelievable. They show, you know, they were so consistent with, you know, recruiting visits and coming to my games. And, you know, coming up here for my recruiting visit, it was pretty much the guys they already recruited that made me want to come here. You know, they recruit guys that have, you know, strong character, and they love the game, and that's pretty much the reason why I decided to come here.
Well, actually, I lied. One more question, because Eli, you mentioned Coach Cam. You're talking about Cameron Conover, I assume, who's the former Plattsburgh assistant, who is now the head coach at Oneonta, the team that you just beat to win the SUNYAC championship. So what was that like for you, beating up on your old assistant and maybe the guy who recruited you in?
It was a good feeling. I feel bad. I was excited that he made it to the championship, but I knew we were going to have to go at each other, and it was good coming out on top of that situation.
How about you, Zach? Did he say anything to you guys after?
I mean, it was kind of like a bittersweet moment. I mean, I'm happy that we won, but, you know, Coach Cam's a great coach. He wished us luck in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, they're going to come back next year. They have a really young team, and, you know, they have a bright future ahead.
Eli Bryant, Zach Coleman, Plattsburgh State men's basketball team, SUNYAC champions once again in NCAA tournament bound. They'll play Nichols College on Friday night, Memorial Gym. We appreciate the time and best of luck and continued success. We'll talk to you again.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, guys. 22-4, Cardinals are a high-flying team, love to play above the rim. Look forward to seeing them on Friday. All right, that will do it for us today. What a Monday it was. J.D. Martinez signs the NHL trade deadline. If you missed any of the show, the Huddle or Champlain Valley Game Night, you can go online, 1013ESPN.com, and get our talk with Dallin Cuff
of ESPN college basketball analysts who told us that UVM point guard Trabel Haynes is one of the best point guards in the entire country, and he was not joking about that. There was no hyperbole there. He felt that way. Talked about his relationship with Middlebury graduate Kobe Altman as well. They two know each other from their crossover time at Columbia University. Also, talked with Trabel Haynes, UVM men's hoop team, also, and in Champlain Valley Game Night, Kylie McDaniel of Fangraphs, and then Eli Bryant, Zach Coleman of Plattsburgh. That'll do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Tom Caron joins the huddle. We'll also hear from Greg Wyshynski, NHL expert at ESPN. All that and more on the huddle and CVGN tomorrow, 101.3 ESPN.
The NCAA took years, so how did schools clear players to be back on the court in a matter of days? More on the NCAA investigation. Plus, U.S. curling skip John Schuster joins Tuesday on Golic and Wingo, 6 Eastern, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
ESPN Radio Sports Beat. From Charlotte, here's Dari Noka.
The gentleman's game, the greatest example of a sport where etiquette is expected, manners are mandatory, and everybody cheers for everybody. Sometimes it seems like it's one step away from everybody gets a trophy and nobody keeps score. It's like T-ball, but it's the other sport with a ball and a tee. It's golf. I've often wondered what it would be like if galleries acted in real life like they did in Happy Gilmore. Heck, if golfers acted like Happy Gilmore. Honestly.